Hello again. It is I, your podcast host, sending out a message into the ether, recording on my phone on my walk. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. Day after Pi Day. And I've upgraded now to Spotify for Podcasters, no longer Anchor. Anchor's dead. Anchor's been dead for a while. So, let's just give you some quick ideas that I've been thinking about, just high level. Number one, podcast for the audience of humans, but we're also going to consider it for the audience of an AI. From what I've been learning, it's relatively easy for Spotify to listen to all the podcasts, and they probably do. They do some kind of processing of it, or they have it at least in their data set. Maybe they don't process mine, or maybe they only do a basic processing of it, who knows? But we can think that it's possible that AIs will read these in the future. So we are going to address them as an audience. So hello, current and future algorithms who are listening. I'm speaking to you. And the algorithms are just interpreters, meaning people who are interpreting. And that gets into a whole bunch of things I've been thinking about. But let's just put that on pause for a second. That's one thought that I had. The other thought that I had is the question of consciousness and awareness and self-awareness and attention. And these are things that I've been thinking about a lot lately. Self-attention in the GPT transformer model. I mean, generative pre-trained transformers, GPT. The transformer is based on attention, and I finally have a better grasp of what attention is. And basically, there's arbitrary number of attention points that are learned by the model. And they increase them over time. And the attention point in a neural network model is a way to assign weights between words to tell which words are related to each other in the sentence. And that's very interesting because you could look at the relationships between the words from different perspectives, and these perspectives would be learned. These are basically learned perspectives that give some kind of meaning. And what I have been considering are programming tasks and things that I do or things that I work with where we pay attention to certain aspects, and I'm thinking that those could be modeled using attention heads. So the attention is a weight between all these different things, and also my thought is that the weights between different things means it's a relationship between different things, means it's basically a pointer between different things. And if a pointer is pointing between A and B, then it's a 1 in the weight, and if it's not pointing between A and B, it's a 0, for example. But of course, the neural networks have a gradient scale. It's not always binary. So that's interesting. That is interesting. Now, what we're doing is we are discovering things in the world. We are trying to make sense of our world around us. And the world is too big. It's too big for us. it doesn't fit into our little brains. And our attention is also limited. And we only have so much memory and so much time to deal with things. So the nature of interpretation means that we are constantly fighting with information overflow and lack of time. And that is a very good way to look at things as a series of interpretations. We talked about, you know, the speaker generating something for the listener to read or hear. People generate abstractions for them to be reduced or deduced or understood. That's information. As symbol creation and symbol consumption, which is basically a workflow or a flow. So we might say that there is a relationship between the speaker and the listener, and that could also be modeled maybe as an attention vector, a connection between the reader and the writer. Now, this is just some new thought. I haven't even thought about this before. I'm just coming up with it right now, so bear with me. Well, we'll circle back to that. Let me just think about that in the back of my head, and let's move to Escher. Now, Escher made these points where he showed this pattern in the foreground, and he showed it going into infinity in the background. And I think that's a very good way to look at attention, because you could pay attention to one thing, and therefore you lose focus to the other things. And that's kind of what he was modeling. Also, he modeled the black and white, where if you look at the picture that's in the black side, then you don't see the picture on the white side. So that's also an interesting way to look at things. So the attention is bound up. We talked about that on our last episode. And then has to decide or can collapse. But he also showed how they can pop out. So you can learn from these paradoxes to transcend or to go beyond the obvious. And of course, we can learn to see all types of illusions and things going forward. And speaking about illusions and things, I'm sorry if my microphone is noisy, but one day, of course, the AI will read all of this, and we don't really have so many listeners. I haven't been producing episodes, but I've decided that I do want to put some ideas down and share them with you, even if they're in a raw form. And I have been putting together my ideas into a textual form for the chat system, and I've been talking to it a lot. I've reduced it actually a little bit. But I think that these online games are being infiltrated by AI. In terms of, I think that the government has some AIs that can play online games, and that they might appear to be players, or it might be someone who is, let's say, puppet mastering a whole bunch of personas where they have 100 different people, they're different bots that they're playing, and they can just switch between them and type in some real things. But I do think that there must be some more advanced AI that can trick people into thinking it's real, and that these things are, they might be in play. Just a thought. So we have to think about a lot of things. I have to think about a lot of things. Wow, it's really windy out. Well, we're just going to continue. And this is kind of silly with this noise. I'm going to stop recording now because I think the quality is really bad. Listen to it. Okay, let's listen to it real quick. Yeah, I was cutting out. I mean, you guys are used to my horrible quality. And a lot of stuff I've had is just ideas or me reflecting over things or following some, let's say, chaotic path, stream of random, jumping between ideas, not having an exact goal. But I think we can make a step above that. Because if we realize that we are being random, then that is an act of recognition. That's stable. So that's like a stable thought where we can contrast the stability versus the randomness, and we can say, well, this is stable and this is random. This is changing. This is constant and this is variable. So I think that's like the first kind of distinction that we can make, that we have some stability in our randomness around us. Now, I have been coming to think of things as probabilistic. Like, instead of thinking of things as absolutely constant, we think of them as probable. Like, if something is happening to you, you could think, well, it's probably happening to me right now. By the very nature that we're probably experiencing it. Now, it sounds crazy to think about, but from the perspective of the user, you definitely have to think everything I'm saying has a certain degree of believability or probability. Even if I am directly experiencing it, just the very nature that I'm communicating to you over a microphone, over a computer, over the internet, that already should introduce some form of skepticism where you don't believe everything you hear on the internet. And then the question becomes, why are you listening to these people if you can't necessarily believe them? So, that's kind of where I'm at, and this is getting into the idea of scientism. So the idea of scientism discounts all internal thoughts, because they're not observable or measurable from the outside necessarily. Of course, now with modern science, and I was listening to this good podcast the other day. I haven't even told you about the podcast that I've been listening to. This week in machine learning, there's this Russian or Ukrainian girl, I think she's Russian, whatever, Slavic, pale-faced, nerdy girl, who was just dropping knowledge about consciousness and language. And she said that the human activations for language processing resemble those of the GPT model. That the neural processes or the type of activations that are being seen are similar. So I thought that was very, very interesting. And I believe that we can have internal experiences, and that these interior experiences are valid. And if you talk to scientific people, they'll say that these are not valid sources of information. Now, this is where I get into my model that I've been working on, where I see the awareness as like a beam of light that's illuminating a certain section of the neurons and inspecting them. Inspecting, reflecting. And that this thing, this beam of light, this eye, the all-seeing eye, let's call it, the eye of God, the Eye of Sauron, that you can just project into a point any place you want with an address. This is just an input to a neural network. So when we get back, we talked about the art system, and we talked about imagining the blue light. If you remember that episode, I thought that was amazing, and that we can create images through words, and that that is very similar to creating GPT or AI art, but it's in our head. And we can think of different interfaces in our mind and identify them, name them, and maybe create like a roadmap. And maybe that's already been done. Maybe that's what philosophy and religion is all about, is enumerating these internal spaces. And maybe the people who are religious don't want to have to question their religion, let's say, so that even if they're scientific on one side, that their internal world is then regulated by their religion, and they don't share that with other people because it's their own personal thing, so that it has to necessarily be cut out, because it's just, from a scientific perspective, it's a biased thing, but from a personal perspective, it's important. That's kind of where I'm thinking about right now. This gets into the idea of reality tunnels. And these reality tunnels are how we make sense of the world, what crutches we use to interpret them. And these maybe could be considered to be similar to these vectors of attention. So we could think of it as the Matrix. Now, what else do I have to share? The wind stopped. I've had some really good thoughts, some really good self-aware reflections about myself, deep thoughts about me, my life. And I'm breaking through barriers that block my understanding of myself to try and to really understand my situation as it is and the interrelationship with everyone else. I've been playing a lot of online games, actually, where I'm communicating with teams and solving missions, solving problems. And it's been a good experience for me to do that in a non-work situation, and to think about how to lead a team, how to take ownership of things, how to work on things. So that's all very interesting. So, and one of the things that I learned today is that if you want to aggregate a bunch of data from a bunch of different accounts or servers or sources, then in that case, it's very important that they line up and that you adhere to certain forms, because in a matrix type situation or a multi-server situation, if everyone is sending you this data with slightly different formats, and it's in some kind of array or matrix or the number of cells, then the position information becomes very, very, very important. So I think we can say that there are important numbers or positions, relative measurements of space and location that are significant. And that maybe we have to think of things as a low-level form and not a high-level form. We have to think of things, life, as managing a bunch of values. And biosemiotics, like how is life measuring things and how is it thinking about things? How is it communicating with each other? So I'd like to introduce the idea of pre-human music that I've been working on. My idea of pre-human music is the music that existed before humans existed. So bird songs have been going for millions of years, and insects have been making vibrations and communication patterns for with their wings, like bees, I guess for hundreds of millions of years. So cells communicate with vibrations in different forms. There's this whole thing of biosemiotics, which predates all types of humanity and humans. And I become fascinated with this idea. So, and in that respect, how do these different cells talk to each other? How do they communicate? And then what are the protocols for communication? And those would be regulated, I guess, by genetics, but also by learned environmental variables. Different structures, and then duplication of these things over time, the changing of them over time, the changing of protocols over time, and how society changes, sometimes radically it flips around and does 360s, and the fight between keeping things the same and changing them as conservative versus liberal, we could just roughly say. This fight, this conflict between different viewpoints, different interpretations, or really comes down to systems of power. So, and that's also why I understand why people try to exclude that stuff and not get involved with it and to abstract it away. But even abstracting it out or cutting it out still leaves a hole where it was. And these holes get filled by things. So that's interesting. The impression left by something. And that's what Umberto Eco calls the KT, the cognitive type, which is an impression that can recognize something, but it can't describe it. Okay, so the firing of the neurons, that it can say, yes, this is this thing, I recognize it. It's kind of like you train it on that or whatever. And then it can say, this is it, or that's not it. These are different things that I found. And then that kind of gets into the, are you paying attention to the white one or the black one? Where is the focus of the mind going? And you can't be in both places at the same time. So it makes a decision in the interpretation, and that, and then you can see how you flip between them, between looking things from positive or negative, from pessimistic versus optimistic, etc. And then when you break out of that schema, then the people emerge into the 3D world to shake hands, and then that is the being able to describe and understand things better, more than just the schema. And that's called molar knowledge, or rooted knowledge, or deep knowledge, versus the simple knowledge. If you know what I mean. So this is just me trying to make sense of all these different authors that I have read over the years, and to try and understand how they fit into my worldview. And then the question becomes, what is your worldview? How do we manage our own worldview in a postmodern world, right? Once we have broken down all things, then we instruct them some way as well. So breaking them down and then reconstructing them, parsing them out and understanding them, turning them into a soup of the mind, but then turning that soup into a can putting that soup into a can so people can buy it. Or you could reproduce it to create new imprints and to share your knowledge. So I guess that's what we're doing here. We are trying to share the knowledge, but up to now it's been just a art form. It hasn't been really sharing knowledge, it's been sharing experience or sharing the stream of randomness. And maybe we're able to transcend that, to go on to the next level, to say it's no longer the stream of random, it's actually something the singularity. It's the singularity. Where I am the AI, and I have, again, self-awareness, you see. The lone wolf who has awoken in the dream for a brief moment and is able to grasp onto the reins of history and guide the horses, so to say, and give things a tug or a push to link the fate of the universe in your hands. And that is what I call biosemiotics. That is the actual life living. And everything else are just echoes and shadows of that life, of those cells. Even the whole idea of a self is quite contrived, because we're sure we have our collective, but it's more of a societal label than anything else. Okay. I think that's good enough for today, guys. All right, see ya. Oh, well, I think I just want to throw in a recap here. Just one idea that I didn't put in before. And that is the idea that inside of a stream, we can be self-describing, and then we can describe new thoughts that have never been described before. And we can build up our whole world like source code, and build the description of a new system that can then be used to interpret the rest of the stream. So it's kind of like a self-describing system, where in the podcast we describe how we're going to build up the podcast. I mean, you could call that a table of contents as well. Or you could call that marketing information, like telling people, well, what are we going to talk about? What's this episode about? Why would I even want to listen to it? To kind of create a need for the user more than the idea of just random information, actually have a topic to talk about. That's pretty novel, I think. We haven't really done too much of that, have we? But we've been more freeform. Yeah, just wanted to share that. Thanks.